So we'll go ahead and start the meeting. Thank you, Representative Michael and Senator Yarbo, for coming out today. We really appreciate you making some time on your schedule to visit with us. And I think we probably all hope that we can maybe do this annually as we kind of get into the legislative session ramping up. But we wanted to just have an opportunity to informally meet with you. I mean, as informally as we can do as a full city council, meet with you outside of Tallahassee to just kind of get a little of an update to you from us on some of the key issues that we see impacting Jacksonville Beach going into the legislative session, but also just a familiarity. Make sure that you guys know that you can call on us anytime you need any sort of background example from our city staff, like you did this past year with short-term vacation rentals, anything like that, that we can provide support or more insight in terms of your districts. We're happy to do that. So if we could start, I'll just have each of you introduce yourselves and your staff, and then we'll go around and we'll say who we are and how long we've been on the council. Do you want to go ahead and start?
Oh, sure. It's great to see you all again. And I think this is so important to have. I really do, because for me, I'm learning the beaches and who's who and what's important to you all. And definitely my ear is attuned to that, because when I walk in that chamber, I want to make sure I'm voting according to what is your priority and your concerns. And so it's good that I hear that, and I'm always here. I'm always available. And so I'm excited as we go into this next session, and we're getting ready to go into a special session. I'm Kayon Michael, for those who don't know me. And this is my legislative aide, Destiny Davis, and brand new on the scene, my district aide. This is who most of you all will be talking. You'll probably talk to both of them, but Kathy Posey will be here, mostly stationed at our district office here, right up the street, just a couple of blocks. So it's great to be able to just not have to go far and to be part of the community here. And I look forward to hearing what you all have to say and what we're going to do going forward and working together.
Thank you. Senator Yarbrough.
Thanks, Mayor. Good evening, everybody. Clay Yarbrough, Senate District 4, which has all of our great beach communities and much of Duval County and then all of Nassau County. So our Senate District's pretty big. But I just wanted to thank you for having us tonight and hosting us. I think this is great. And I echo what Rep. Michael said. I'm very honored to represent the area and to listen to the priorities here and work as best we can to take all of that to Tallahassee and get it pushed through, and look forward to just listening tonight and taking notes, and appreciate, you know, very much y'all doing that. And I couldn't have a better partner in the House for what we're doing on behalf of our beaches in our district. So appreciate Rep. Michael's work. She's doing a great job. For my staff, my all-star legislative aide, David Papia, is here tonight too, and we are at your service. So thanks again for having us.
Thank you. So, Daniel.
Yep. Councilman Dan Jansen, I've been on council for 3 years. Thank you both for coming out, carving out time in your busy schedules to meet with us. I think this is going to be a nice information gathering that we can have going forward from year to year, or even whatever frequency we decide to have that. So thank you.
Thank Councilmember Fernando Meza, been in office since 2020. Same amount of time as my colleague here, Dan Jansen. Of course, I'm really thankful you guys are here to hear us out, and I look forward to this conversation. Thank you.
I'm Sandy Golding. I've been on the council since 2018, so this is my fifth year. And just want to thank you both for your accessibility during this last session. You know, there was a lot going on, and you both, when we were there in Tallahassee, it was great to be able to spend some time with you. But also, when we got back and things got a little crazier, it was great to be able to reach out to you guys, and I really appreciate that.
I'm Mike Stephopoulos. I'm the city manager. I've been here for just shy of 5 years, and consider me to be a resource for both of you. If there's ever information that you need about how legislation is or may affect a community, or if you want tours, the ability to go out and actually see something in practice, give me a holler and I will arrange for that to happen here in Jacks Beach.
Corey Nichols, Vice Mayor. I just want to say thank you very much. We really appreciate your representation. You've done an outstanding job, and I just look forward to working with y'all more. And I've been on council 5 years.
Councilman Greg Sutton, Been on council for just coming up on 1 year. I have the honor of filling the seat that Chet Stokes vacated a year ago, and I was on the Planning Commission in Jacksonville Beach for about 17 years prior to that.
Great resource. My name is Bill Horn. I came on with Greg last November. I'm at 1 year into my 4 year term, so I appreciate that. I've heard wonderful things about the accessibility and the assistance you guys have provided some other teams, so greatly appreciate it. And it's always nice to see representatives come here and speak to us in person.
And as you know, I'm Chris Hoffman, Mayor of Jacksonville Beach. 3 years into my first term, and I served on the council for 8 years prior to that. So when I say 11 years, that sounds really long. Three and eight sounds better. So again, just really appreciate being here. We have a really loose agenda. I know you have a hard out at 6:30, and I don't foresee us necessarily going that long because I think this will be hopefully an introductory overview discussion, first of many to come in terms of when we come see you in Tallahassee and communications back and forth. And as you know, our legislative agenda really mirrors the Florida League of Cities agenda, so a lot of those issues are the same. Some issues we feel extra strong about because they may have a disproportionate impact on us as a coastal city. I think short-term vacation rentals is a great place to show that example, and Council Member Golding is going to kind of lead that discussion.
So I know you guys, I've talked to both of you at length about vacation rentals and their impact on Jack's Beach, and I sent both of you a summary that Mike and I worked on just so that we could give you a good overview of the issues that Jack's Beach deals with when it comes to vacation rentals. And just a little side note, in follow-up to what the mayor said, I serve on the Municipal Administration Policy Committee for the League of Cities, and so vacation rentals has been a priority issue for that policy committee for several years. Don't know, we haven't determined our priority this year, but it's still up there with that committee, so just let you know that it's not going away, and I know you guys know that. And I don't know that I need to spend a whole lot of time on this topic just because we did put together this summary for you, but just to give you kind of a high-level overview, I would say that the biggest issue for vacation rentals for us is just the impact that they're having on our community. First and foremost, there are concerns about their impact on our neighborhoods, and that revolves around noise, trash, and violence. We've had some violence issues here in Jack's Beach, and that was detailed in this as well. It's really difficult when our neighbors are almost every weekend having to deal with something different, and that's the challenge with the vacation rentals. And I think that for us, one of the things that we feel is lacking is the accountability that other businesses like hotels have, and there are standards that hotels have to conform to, and we have vacation rentals that really there's no accountability like what the hotels have. If there were some of that, then that would be a little more equitable, we think. The hotel businesses, they are following standards, and we feel that these vacation rentals should be following some standards too that we think will also help us to be able to address issues as we need to. And then also too, the other thing we're seeing is loss of housing to investors and these vacation rentals that are now no longer places that people can live. And that's becoming an issue for us. As you saw in this summary, we've got at least 545 properties that have been identified that should be registering as vacation rentals. And that's not all the vacation rentals, but we don't require all of them to register because we're just focusing on the single family, the two family, and the townhomes. So they are definitely impacting the market that we have for homes. And I would just say, to summarize what we need, and maybe you guys can help with this during the next legislative session, We need local authority to be able to suspend the operation if they are not complying either with state requirements or with our local requirements, because there is no, there's no accountability. They're just able, they're able to keep doing what, whatever they want to do with no accountability. And another thing would be maybe that they don't get the state license without showing proof of a local registration. Maybe that's another thing that could be done to try to help us do what we need to do when it comes to problems, addressing the problems. Now, not all the vacation rentals are problems, but when we have problems, we have no tools for dealing with the problems. And then the third ask would be if there is registration required by the state, that we are more than happy on the local level to help with the enforcement of that registration, because we're boots on the ground. We're the ones dealing with the issues every day. And we know that DBPR, you know, is not staffed to be able to deal with the numbers of vacation rentals that we have across the state. So those would be the three things that I would say that would be helpful for us in this community. I don't know if any of my colleagues would like to add anything.
So did you, when you provided them with information, did you give them information about how some people are just taking advantage of the monthly, getting registered and dropping yep. off and jumping?
Yeah, that's in the here. Summary,
okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're in a unique position in both of your districts, probably the only area that is even really dealing with this as an issue, because Atlantic Beach and Neptune Beach have prohibited short-term vacation rentals since 2011, I believe. And until quite recently, we had very affordable housing stock. So you could get into a house, a single family house, that's a bike ride from the beach. So it's really attractive to individuals or institutional investors that wanted to flip single family residences into short-term vacation rentals. So we're definitely seeing the results of that throughout every neighborhood in Jacksonville Beach. Any thoughts? Anything you guys want to add? As far as
I'd just say I did actually today text, I was texting with my colleague, Senator DeSigley, who filed a bill in the Senate last year, and he said he does intend to file again. So I've asked him if we could meet in a couple of weeks when we're back over there for our next committee week and talk through a lot of the details on the issues and all. So I'll update y'all after that, or to Councilwoman Golding, if mm-hmm. we, you know, we can do that directly. Or
that'd be great.
Whatever, so happy to do that.
Thank you.
But we'll be taking the concerns out of here. So.
Okay, thank you.
I know for our office, I remember, if I recall correctly, Destiny, there was a constituent that called and said he's frustrated with this issue, with the short-term vacation rentals, and that he can't seem to beat them, so he's gonna join them. So I think he said he was selling his home.
Yes.
Putting it on the market.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Turning it into a short-term rental because it's, you know, he doesn't know who's coming in and out all the time, things like that. He's like so frustrated at this point. He did say, if I can't beat this, I'm going to join them at this point. So. There's residents who are very frustrated in the community, for sure. So it is a hot topic.
It's having new neighbors every single weekend, but without the kind of societal norms of how you treat people that you live next door to each other. So there's no social contract there with the people that are just coming and going in a revolving door. I don't think it's ever been any of our positions that we would support banning them or anything like that, but we do have to have some, you know, these are our residents, and they are coming to us with legitimate problems, and our hands are largely tied, so we just need a little more ability to handle these.
And when our residents have to call the police every weekend because of issues, that's, you know, our residents shouldn't be put in that position. And just like the mayor said, I mean, if it were a long-term rental and, you know, they were there, it was the same people all year long, I think that it could be addressed. But every weekend you have somebody different, and that's what's making it such a challenge for us.
I see you guys have those pictures. That was from an Airbnb earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
There's a write-up in the narrative that talks about the fact that this past late spring, we had two instances where gangs basically took out short-term vacation rentals to have house parties. And when they had those house parties, they brought in guns, they brought in drugs, and it was a potential situation within our community. Our police department worked with JSO to neutralize the issue. But I thought it would be interesting for you to see the actual write-up with the photo of the guns and the ammunition and drugs that were confiscated during those two raids. And that goes back to treating the short-term vacation rentals similar as you would a hotel or a motel or even a bed and breakfast. If you go to a hotel, there's always employees on site or managers on site during the tenure there. And with short-term vacation rentals, there is no requirement that a representative for the property or the homeowner be present. So people can pretty much come in and take advantage to do whatever they feel is appropriate. And if it's pushing the limits of legality, they will do so.
I can say from the House side, I'm not the only representative concerned about this. It's all of the representatives who represent coastal areas that were alarmed, even by the last bill that came up last session. And so we were able to, I wasn't the only voice of opposition in the room. And so that helps, if that helps you all in knowing that, because I think there's more of us that are impacted and that represent those coastal areas than not on the House side. So this is bothersome. So this is from just two raids.
Yep. Correct.
Are y'all hearing from the other side? Obviously, there's a lot of money involved with short-term rentals. What are you hearing from the other side? Obviously, they want as limited regulation as possible.
Or what are they asking
for?
What are they trying to achieve
other than make money?
I think you just hit the two primary things in what you said. I mean, less regulation and the ability to do whatever and make more money without saying it. You know, that's a goal. But it's the ability to do it, basically be as uninhibited as possible,
right,
for lack of a better word. So they don't want, any more oversight than they have to have or have to worry about registrations or anything like that. I mean, that's what we hear directly or read between the lines very clearly.
And it's just some of the other coastal communities, half of their, what is Anna Maria Island? You've got more than 50% of the houses are now short-term rentals. So you're like the community's dying.
Mm-hmm.
It's just turning into one large hotel, and we don't want to see that happen here.
No, and I think it's a very fair point to say, too, like Mike and Councilman Golding, you said it best. I mean, we hold the hoteliers and the motels and all to certain standards, but these, especially as we go along further, it becomes more like that if we can't have enforcement, if there's some legitimate issue that comes up or other standards, and things of that nature, even what you just said about no requirement for an owner or manager to be present or to be there really at all during the time of someone's stay or right before, right after, and all. So that's different than running a home and somebody being there for 12 months. I mean, like you said, this is a revolving door in and out, every weekend or sometimes multiple times during the week. And, it's not good for the rest of the community around if there's not going to be high standards in place. So, I would find a balance with it.
So more to come on that.
Yep.
I'm sure there will be a lot more conversations. And just please know this is such an important issue for us. And I think all of the kind of obvious ones, but also the affordability of our housing stock in Jacksonville Beach and the public safety issue, which is really, it's gone from just parking and traffic to very legitimate issues in terms of weapons, drugs, gang activity. So that's really piquing our interest even more on the public safety side. So we'll jump to the next topic.
Could I just add something really quick that I thought of? The mayor mentioned this, Neptune Beach and Atlantic Beach, they prohibited them essentially prior to 2011. Neptune Beach is 30 days, Atlantic Beach is 90.
Yeah.
Okay. 90 days. But that's a very good point that she raises, because what that does is it just funnels them all to Jack's Beach.
Yep.
So we're we're really in a very difficult situation, and I just wanted to follow up on that.
Was it like 5 or 8 years ago we had like 40 of them? I mean, we just had a handful.
I don't know that we've ever had an accurate.
Yeah, but it was. It's just grown exponentially.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's they're not. There's more and more of them. So
we'll go to our next item, and we'll turn to Councilman Jansen to speak about the Live Local Act.
Yeah, I'm just going to talk briefly about this, especially in the interest of time. I think Saltman Community is a bit more important for us, but I serve on the Land Use and Economic Development Committee, and one of the issues that they brought up was the Live Local Act and some of the unintended consequences of this coming into play. I know that this was, I think, Senator Papadonis building the champion, as speaker. So the committee's not taking it up as a priority item number one, but there's already been a couple cities, Delray and
Doral.
Doral have put moratoriums out to basically stop the flow of the Live Local Act, so that which is obviously being met with some resistance. They're concerned about the biggest concern that they brought up that I saw was the tax exemption that extends into 2030 for people that are building affordable housing. So some projects have stopped midstream and said, "Hold on, if we can get a tax exemption, we'll just back this out. We'll stop our project and we'll take advantage of the tax implications that come with Live Local." There's some other side factors on there. Mike, do you remember any of the major ones that were on that?
One of the other ones was a concern about the financing mechanism.
Right.
The fact that if you had a project move forward under the Live Local Act, where the exemption under which it was built expires after a 10-year window, would they be able to actually achieve financing, knowing that most financing is done over a 30-year window? But once that special exemption goes away, if something happens to the property, you could not rebuild it because it would be non-conforming once it goes back to status quo.
I can get a PowerPoint presentation that was given to us and forward it to both of y'all so you can see what was presented and some of the issues they had. Okay. And what's kind of looming in the future, if you will. And I think I've heard that there's going to be some modifications to the Live Local Act as time moves on. I don't know how true that is, but from both sides.
So while we're on that, I just want to take a moment and introduce our planning director, Heather Ireland, who's here today. And I should have introduced our fire marshal, Steve Shotta, who's probably sitting in on the short-term vacation rentals in case there were any questions. And you'll hear from our police chief, Jean Paul Smith, back there too. Again, all of our city staff are resources for you as well if you have any specific questions in terms of municipal operations. So we'll go back to Dan now for sovereign immunity.
Right, so the number one priority for land use and economic development was sovereign immunity, because those numbers have been set in 2011. I think it's 200,000 per person, 300,000 per incident, which is the cap for the sovereign immunity. I know that there was some referendum brought forward in reference to increasing it into the millions, which I don't really think it'll ever get that far. At least I hope it doesn't, because a city like ours would be bankrupt with one good incident that happened when people filed lawsuits. Mm-hmm. I think there is a number that needs to be reached. I think it's a lot less than the millions, number one. Mm-hmm. And this is an issue that really faces the entire state of Florida. When you have sovereign immunity that's not being addressed, and we can't stick our heads in the sand and say, all right, we'll just oppose it and hope that it goes away, because I think it's going to gain traction as time goes on because those numbers are low. So it also comes into play with issues like PFAS, the chemicals in the water. There's no coverage for cities that are getting sued because of this. The government introduces these chemicals into the water, and now people are having some consequences because of them and filing lawsuits against municipalities, and there's no immunity for us in reference to something like that. So the PFAS is one of the issues we took up to the federal level to try to get some coverage on that as well. We also believe that we should increase the standards of being able to file a lawsuit to a gross negligence, not, I was walking down the sidewalk, I tripped and fell, so now I want to sue you for $200,000. that the threshold should be much higher than whatever initiating a lawsuit or anything in that manner.
Okay. You said raise it to gross negligence?
Yes.
As a minimum, okay.
Yes.
All right.
We'll shoot for the moon. Yeah, hope we get somewhere.
You know how the legislative process works.
Well, and you know, this past legislative session, the Senate bill for sovereign immunity was a little more palatable than the House bill. The House bill was
like 1.3 million or something.
Yeah,
like that.
So you've got some work to do,
yes.
Apparently.
It did move in the Senate. It moved through one committee in the House before it stopped.
Right, you take an incident like a school shooting or something like that, and you end up getting some type of lawsuit against the city. I mean, you can really bankrupt even smaller cities. You take cities like Satellite Beach, you know, where they only have 7,000 or 8,000 people. So you know they're probably up.
Yeah, really the only other kind of related avenue is the way that someone can get above the cap is if they have a claim bill.
Sure.
And then they can get the legislature to bless a higher number, but other than that, they have to stay under the cap.
Correct. And maybe that cap needs to go up. I don't know what the number, magic number is, 100,000 per, you know, per person, and then it's the same for incident. But I know there needs to be an increase because it hasn't been touched since 2011. So, but it has to be reasonable in my mind.
And then the final issue that we have on our informal internal agenda is public safety recruitment and retention, and our city manager is going to speak to that.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to start off by saying this is not something that the state has been silent on, and we appreciate everything that the state has done up to this point in time. We're hopefully looking for more and even some more focused initiatives to be done. The public safety recruitment and retention is not just a local issue or a state issue, it is a national issue. There are fewer people getting into the public safety realm than there have been at any other time I think anyone's been in this room. The chief can speak to what we see coming out of the police academy, where academy classes used to have between 50 and 60 participants. They're lucky if they have 8 to 10. And typically when you go to see who those 8 to 10 are, 3/4 of them are already spoken for by, in this area, JSO or St. John's County, which means all the other sheriff's offices and police departments are fighting over the one or two candidates that are coming out of the academy with that particular class. With that being said, we know that the framework for freedom that the state has put in place and the governor signed off on, that is a good start. The fact that we've got the signing bonuses for people that go into public safety and join a sheriff's office or a police department, that's all good. Was very happy to see, I think it was last month, that the governor started to actively promote marketing in outside markets. And I think it was in the Chicago area and maybe California that they were starting to do billboards to entice public safety officers to come into the state. But don't forget, there's 1,000 people a day still coming into the state of Florida. And every time you hear about departments being down 1, 2, 3 or more officers, that means the public safety ratio of police officers to public is continuing to drop and get wider. If there is more that can be done or even a continuity of it, things that could be done such as create incentives for people to go into the police academy, providing assistance for reciprocity for officers that are coming in from out of state, and continue with those bonus programs so that departments can take advantage of it. What we're starting to see now is the departments be pitted against each other, where you're trying to rob Peter to pay Paul. There aren't enough new officers. It's, can I get an officer from another agency to come to ours? That's a no-win situation for everybody in the state of Florida, because all you're doing at that point is trading officers from one agency to another. We need to figure out how to get new officers in the pipeline, either from out of state or within the state, by trying to get them into the police academy. Chief, I don't know if there's anything you want to add to that, or if you're available for questions, if there are any. Okay, thank you. And this, Councilmember Golding mentioned that municipal administration is looking at two top priorities, one of them being STVRs. This is the other one. Public safety is likely going to be a priority for Florida League of Cities.
I think what Mike was just saying, it's true, but I think if we steal the ideas from military when it comes to recruiting and trying to keep younger generations interested into not just the military, but becoming law enforcement. As a little kid growing up, I was wanting to be a cop, but you have little kids right now that don't want to, even high school kids or kids in college right now, they don't want to be cops. How can they be enticed? I think the state's doing everything they can.
I know that Congressman Rutherford actually, piggyback on what you said, Congressman Rutherford actually had a campaign that was recruiting people coming out of the military mm-hmm. back when I was serving in the agency. So that was, in the late 90s, early 2000s, he created a campaign to try to catch those that were leaving the military and see if he can steer them in a direction to become police officers. Something that we can think of moving forward. Sorry.
I think my question is, as far as ratio and numbers, where are we when it comes to...
Here in Jacks Beach, we're down how many right now, Chief?
Down six.
Down six out of 67 sworn.
Down 10. You mean the officer-to-citizen ratio?
Yes.
Okay, that's really not a real number. It's going to depend on your community, your demographics. For instance, we have a higher citizen ratio than normal, as do all beach communities in Florida, because we have large influxes.
Yeah.
So ours is higher than, let's say, Lake City, Florida, which would be lower because they don't have an influx of people. They have a 25,000 base population, and that's the majority of people they police. After 25,000 base population, I was doing 100,000 on Saturday and 100,000 on Sunday. So of course our ratio has got to be higher, so the old ratio is really a misnomer and it doesn't really mean anything when you boil it down. It's depending on the community demographics, your crime rates, a lot of things.
Probably a better statistic is how many departments can you find that are fully staffed or close to fully staffed,
right?
Because that's what they've determined they need in order to be effective and provide effective policing. In our case, like Chief indicated, we're down six. He's got another three retirements coming up. That's going to put us 15%. somewhere in the 15% down. There are other agencies across the state that are in worse shape than we are. They're in that 20-30% down range. And they're looking at the same prospects we are, which is there's no officers out there to get to come into your organization.
And it's not just the air show that happens once a year. We have the air show the 4th of July and New Year's Eve, and whenever these big events happen, we're the playground. And so everybody comes to the beach, and now we're back to stealing officers from other places just to get coverage.
Yeah. And have we looked at, which I did want to hear the numbers, the actual numbers. Thank you for that. Have we looked at, when it comes to recruitment, have we looked at the possibility of maybe capturing or focusing on high school students and providing a path for them to make it through the academy, to try and get them as young as we can and into the academy or whatever training is necessary?
Yes, ma'am. We've changed the way we're thinking in law enforcement about everything we do, recruiting, everything from being real aggressive with applicants and calling them back. We do a one-day process where we get them in and get them through before anybody gets their hands on them. But, you know, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The second best time is today. But the tree we plant today is not going to bear fruit for a couple of years down the road. High schoolers will not do us any good now. So, yes, we're still planting those seeds for tomorrow, but currently, my fear is that the spigot is shut off, that there is no more new employees, the new applicants coming through. So everybody seems to be poaching from other agencies, and that's just not Florida, who has the best out of any state in the country. It seems like a national trend. And the recruits are just not coming. We're getting two applicants, three applicants. The spigot's just shut off, and there is no more. So that's the question, what do we do in the future if there are no more applicants? And I think we're seeing that because the bonuses and the pay across the country are just going up. And it shows that the problem not being solved because, I mean, they have $20,000 bonuses, $30,000 bonuses, higher pay, and there's just still nobody coming through. So, you know, part's societal and part of it's pendulum swinging back and forth. Certainly, Florida's the place to be in law enforcement. Everybody I've talked to since. They consider us lucky in Florida, so I'd say we capitalize on it, and then we'll poach from every other city who doesn't appreciate their law enforcement. That includes probably the whole Northern Belt.
Yep.
So, from California all the way east, down the East Coast, and we appreciate them, and I think the governor's shown that with his bonuses every year and the bonus again law enforcement. And to be very honest with you, the most important thing to anybody is they're supported, officers are supported by their elected leaders and law and order. That's the biggest thing. That's why people are leaving. Money doesn't mean anything. Portland's still not recruiting any officers because they're not standing behind their law enforcement money to do the right things for the right reasons. But I think our state, that's the biggest thing positive about our state is elected officials on every level stand behind their law enforcement policy. So I urge you to continue that.
Absolutely. And is it the same for the fire and rescue?
All the public safety positions. Fire is going through the same position there, trying to get personnel in. It's no longer that. You still get the 5 and 6 year olds who like firefighters going down the road. But then societal changes has changed all that up.
I'm reflecting back on, again, on the military recruitment. One of the things that Congressman Rutherford did when he was a sheriff was he made exception that if you had a certain amount of time in the military that you can come out with a 2-year degree instead of having to have your bachelor's degree, the 4-year degree. And the experience was in exchange for those last 2 years. And then as that evolved, he had it set in place a few years later to say, all right, you're hired with a 2-year degree and the experience, but if you want to start seeking promotions, if you want to make it a sergeant or lieutenant, you're going to have to go back and get those other 2 years, which I think is fair. It's a great recruitment tool, and it kind of opens the door for a lot of individuals.
And that's being a military community, I mean, it seems like,
right.
You know, they a lot of them live in Jacksonville Beach, a lot of them live in the area, so they love it and they like to stay.
And to piggyback on what Chief was saying about Portland and stuff, right now, Florida is very pro law enforcement, so that's a plus. A lot of the elected officials in Jacksonville Beach and the city of Jacksonville are pro law enforcement. But as long as that rhetoric of defund the police and making all police bad people, this young individuals, the new generations, they're not going to want to become police officers. And it hurts when you see an elected official in another city in another state saying, you know, these cops are horrible, but they're doing the job that the state legislature, the Constitution has told them to do. You know, what's going on in Philly, the mayor just tells the cops to let them be. Well, how can we recruit more officers if that rhetoric is going on and it's making it harder for Florida to recruit officers? My cousin wants to move to Florida to become a police officer. He's just waiting on his equity to build up in his house that he just bought, and he's going to come down here just because it's law enforcement friendly. Yeah. But that rhetoric just
needs to stop. Well, that's funny you mentioned that, though, because that's another incentive that could be done. You know, helping somebody move. You know, if you put something in play that helps with the
relocation
benefits, right?
Yeah. So it's a complex issue, and it's far more complex than even just more money. And I wanted to just make sure that you guys know one distinction that we have in Jacksonville Beach with our police department is a defined benefit plan. So JSO has a defined contribution plan now, but when you're looking at the newer generation of workers, that's not necessarily an incentive because they may not be planning to be in any one place long enough to become vested. And so that's just a change in our workforce, and that's just one example of that. But it's a complex issue that we hope the state can help us with.
And that's for all the public safety personnel, fire and police?
So we contract the fire out to
oh, right.
through
okay.
JFRD, okay. So, but our police department is
for police, yeah, got it.
Benefit.
And we're well funded.
I like the idea of the relocation assistance.
Yeah.
I think that's key. That's a very vital point, or it could be a vital issue. Because of the economy and just, you know.
Well, and the cost of homes in Florida are
Well, that goes back to short-term rental. I mean,
right, right.
You know, we're artificially inflating our home value. So, I mean, it's all cyclical.
And that was the last issue that we have on our, again, informal internal agenda here. But do you have anything you'd like to share with us that might be coming up that maybe is not on our radar, or things that you guys are working on specifically that would impact our local government here that you'd like to share? And no pressure, I'm putting you on the spot a little bit.
But I do appreciate your newsletter, though. Your email newsletter has some great information. Sandy has a great one, too. If you want to keep up to date, follow her.
I think you get mine, don't you?
Yeah,
exactly. Destiny gets it.
Well, I tell you, I don't think you will find another set of a better state that more supports our law enforcement.
Amen.
And legislator that supports our law enforcement, our first responders in Florida. And particularly, I'm very honored to serve because they share my heart, and I'm sure with Senator Yarbrough down there, and he can speak for himself. I mean, we know that this is a critical issue, and the short-term vacation rentals, I've spent so many nights just trying to figure this thing out. I'm like, there's got to be a resolution. There has to be an answer. I still haven't came up with anything, but I just want you all to know you definitely are on my radar, and you're significant to me. I'm sorry to have my baby. To you all, I apologize. That's a little bit, that's kind of rude. I was raised that you just don't put your bike to anyone. So I can tell you going into this next session, I don't know if it's going to be like it was the last one. The last one was, I think it was record breaking. I don't think we'll have another one like it. But for me, it would be along the same lines of our seniors, our most vulnerable citizens, children, doing a lot of work around children and the seniors, our veterans. And I am definitely trying my best to come up with something for these short STVRs, I'll say, because there's gotta be an answer. There's gotta be a solution to it. And it is hurting us as a community. I know it is, we're hearing it. Hearing it again tonight. I just don't know what it is just yet, but I'm going into the next session with that in mind, with all of this in mind. And you all know, you know, I think Sandy, you showed up at our last, we were going into the chamber, and I think you were standing there and you're like, vote no. I heard Representative Michael, and I'm looking around because your brain is getting ready to go in here. You know you're going to battle. You know, and I hear my name being called, and there you are. And I said, I got you. Don't worry, we got you.
And she will continue to be there.
So I just know we're with you. I mean, really. My door is open at any time. You can reach me, all of y'all can reach me, and just let me know. If you see something that comes on the radar that you don't think I know, or even if you think I know, please let me know. Please reach out to me because I don't want to miss anything. And just know that my finger is on the pulse of what's going on and making sure that you're heard and that I represent you there and your voice is heard there. So
thank you.
That's what I've got. And I'm just honored to work with the senator down here. He's easy to work with. We're a great team because I can call him up and he takes
Absolutely.
My calls. Some people I got to call like 3 or 4 times. And
well, you're easy to work with, Rep, so thanks for this time. It works both ways, so it's a partnership. Now, I will say, too, that with the STVR, so we had when we were getting near the end of session, right in that last week back in May, it was hotly contested, and it was going back and forth. I think it had gone over to the House, and then came back, and then Senate was trying to figure out what to do, and my colleague who's running the bills running all over the room trying to count votes and do some things.
Yeah.
And I was emailing with, I think with you, Mayor, and Mike, and Councilwoman Golding. Literally, I'm sitting there on the phone. I can overhear him talking to someone. No one needs dropping because it's it was right there, so I wasn't easy to stand right in front of my desk. So anyway, but we were going back and forth about it and all, and I wasn't upset that the bill, you know, basically fell apart at the end. That was fine with me. And on our first vote, I was down on it anyway, so because I wasn't convinced it was good. So like the rep articulated, I mean, we'll keep pushing to find a solution. I wanted to tell you too, and we talked about it a few minutes ago, that the document is very helpful, and like I said, I'm going to meet with the senator about it and just walk through those items and, you know, point it out and make the case. So I appreciate y'all doing the legwork, put that together, and for meeting with me last month to talk about it. I think we're not in November yet. Okay, so it was last month, mm-hmm. in September. So thank you for that. Really, the only things that I'm hearing beyond what we've talked about tonight, I know the Senate President is, there's some healthcare initiatives that she wants to do, but I don't really have a lot of specifics on that yet. So we're waiting to, she's calling it the Live Healthy Initiative, but I don't know what all is entailed yet. And Rep. Michael may know a little bit more if the speaker's looking at some things. I haven't heard a whole lot just yet. I know with education, we've done a lot in the space of education earlier this year with school choice and with a lot of child protection issues. But there are some other items that I think they're going to look at. But again, I don't know specifics yet. So beyond that, bills are kind of slowly trickling in and being filed and referenced, but there's not a ton just yet. So I think once everybody is, you know, probably once we kick into November and everybody realizes there's only a short window before session starts in January, then bills will, you know, just start hitting pretty hard in the holiday months. So, and then we'll get into it. So, it's,
can I ask a quick question about the utility, sure. utility bill that was?
Yes, yes.
How, what that looks like coming up this year?
Yeah, so the rumor is persistent that they want to try that bill again. So we will be at the ready on that one,
okay.
Because we don't want to hurt our local utilities. I'll just say it that way. So I was very public about that last year, and the press too. And I know, not to speak for in her absence, but I know Senator Davis, who's also from Jacksonville, feels very strongly about that too. And I know if the rep has any comments, you can share. But that's important to us, not only for the beaches, but for all of Jacksonville, the way things are structured with JEA as well. So we're watching that closely.
Yeah. Very good.
Thank you.
And this, we are going into special session that's been called. And so I know that hurricane relief is one of the areas that we'll be in there fighting over. also, the insurance premiums, the insurance issues that we have is something that we're going to be talking about. And so just so you all know that, because if that brings any kind of relief, and I will be working as well with the House sponsor if they bring this back around or whatever we got going on. And this is good. I mean, it's nothing like the reality of seeing this in your face. And so thank you for providing this information. As much information as you all can give us, the better we're able to go in and stand and hold our ground on why we're saying no to this. Because sometimes we are working, we're saying no to constituents that we really like. We really, really like them. And we would agree most of the time with them. But on these type of issues, of course, our district, the beaches is priority for me. It's important. So I thank you all for giving us this information.
Well, thank you both for your time, and thank you to your staffs and to you for serving our shared constituencies and for being open to coming to this meeting. We will make a note for next time that we'll put you both at the same end of the table. Yeah. Sandy was watching a tennis match, so we didn't know we were. It was a little on the line.
I think it's the sun.
Yeah,
and the sun was bad.
We're going to get a close up.
So we'll, you know, this is the first time. We'll continue to get better.
Thank you again. I mean, we said it earlier, but thank you again for inviting us, for having this, and. We appreciate it. I mean, we do our formal delegation hearing that we'll have, you know, next week, you know, for anyone who wants to come. But I don't think, even in my 6 years in the House before this, I had a group that did this. So we could focus just on the issues important to you. So thank you.
Well, in my 8 years plus three so far in service to Jacksonville Beach, this has been the most actively involved council and city manager that we've had in terms of state issues. And we're seeing, it brings more to light of the importance of that, and it just kind of drives us even more and more to to be involved in the League of Cities. I think four of our the people around this table are on legislative committees, and to have that voice through that, but also through our own lobbyists and directly with you. So it's important. These are issues that are impacting our day-to-day lives and the lives of our citizens, and we want to make sure that you guys, that we have that pipeline to you, that you know that. So thank you very much for your time. We got you out 10 minutes early.
And baseball.
Appreciate. Oh, that's important.
That's important. Absolutely.
Thank you.